Blue Line.
Going to open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today's March 31st, 2009. Not 8 a.m., but it's close. First thing I'm going to do is carry over House Bill 2763 to our Thursday meeting. We've got another amendment we're waiting on, or need to get in, and then therefore waiting on. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2220. Just for committee members' benefit, we're going to do the bottom of the list first, 2220, and then 2020. We're waiting on some letters and fiscals and things on our bills for work session up at the top of the list. So, House Bill 2220, I was pretty sure it's probably, I don't know if I have all departments or if I have just ODF&W and State Police, I don't know if I have Marine Board or not. No, so Ron Anglin, ODF&W, why don't you... go ahead and join us.
Did we? Please.
No.
Are we missing any other agency folks who want to be up here? Marine Board or? Nope. Not maybe. Certainly don't have to be if you don't want to be. But since your name's in the bill, I thought I'd invite you all.
Good morning, Chair Klim, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. House Bill 2220, as submitted, is designed to help the state of Oregon deal with the potential influx of quagga and zebra mussels coming into the state. It's been proven in other states that where they do get established, that they do cause a severe amount of economic damage and environmental damage. And here in Oregon, we want to do everything we possibly can to prevent that from happening. The bill is originally submitted. We got into some further discussions with state police and our legal folks and determined that there really were some technical problems with it from a legal standpoint on setting up mandatory check stations and creating a crime associated with that if it didn't stop. So we actually have some proposed amendments that we have submitted that just haven't worked their way through the system yet that would take out the mandatory check station parts and create a voluntary check station type of system where we can encourage people to stop and still leave the state police with the authority to, with probable cause, pull over and do the type of enforcement that they need to do. And then for us as an agency, it also would give us the ability to impose civil penalties if it was determined that we didn't want to go with the normal misdemeanor route through OSP and the local court system. It's been determined that in some of the eastern states where these mussels have established that they're spending in excess of $10 billion to deal with these problems. Some of the energy facilities in the Great Lakes area are spending $860 million over the next 10 years to deal with the infestations and cleaning out the pipe systems. The water systems for drinking water in a lot of those places are looking to spend $4 to $5 billion over the next 10 years. So the state of Oregon, we're really trying to do something a little more proactive and keep us from getting to that point. Washington, California, and Utah all have similar type of laws in place and things that fit within their statutory responsibility. Montana and Idaho are currently looking and have legislation in the works during their sessions that would also give them the authority to deal with zebra and quagga mussels. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Gentlemen, want to talk or just answer questions, whatever your preference.
Thank you, Chairman Klem, members of the committee. My name is Randy Henry, Operations Policy Analyst with the Marine Board. I think you're familiar with some of the history of the issues that we're talking about here, but again, briefly, in 2007 and early 2008, we did have several boats come through the state that were contaminated with zebra and quagga mussels, and discovered at that time that we really didn't have the, or I guess, the organization or the infrastructure or the rules or laws to deal with those and decontaminate them within the state. Based on those actions, we circled up and decided to start looking at the problem very seriously and how we could proactively deal with contaminated boats that were entering the state. The first thing we did was review existing laws to make sure that we didn't have to send contaminated vessels to Washington again for cleaning, as we did a couple times. So we worked together with ODFW, Portland State University, and other folks, and we began a training program where we trained several hundred law enforcement officers across the state in identification and enforcement protocols. We developed additional enforcement protocols. We worked with numerous state and federal agencies, and we began working with other agencies and authorities to purchase some wash equipment that is now out there in the state and ready to respond. We've come a long ways in the last year and a half. House Bill 2220 was originally designed to provide the authority to set up an inspection station and require these stops, just like they've got in California and Washington and other states. It's apparent that that's rather much more complicated in Oregon. I appreciate the Oregon State Police and ODFW's diligence in trying to work through this and find the appropriate authority to help us address this particular issue. Fortunately, we've also got House Bill 2583, which I think is a very useful complement to what we're proposing in 2220. I think they will work together well. 2220, as the amendments come through, is probably, as I understand it, the best that we can do. And it parallels what ODFW already does for big game stops and for creel checks. It's fairly consistent with the other activities. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
I've just got one. Captain Marquis, is there anything you can do to make sure that some invasive species arrive at the time we want them to before our committee actually gets going?
I think it went through by him.
Yeah.
No, he got it.
Did he?
Yeah.
There was recognition instantaneously.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've talked about this before, and it is a huge problem, and we do have to get out ahead of it. Part of it, of course, is going to be enforcement. But can you talk to us a little bit about the educational part, what you're doing, for instance, at marinas, boat lot sites, sail sites where boats are marketed, boat shows, what you're doing with the sheriff's offices or our state police? You have little brochures you can hand out as you check boats and talk to fishermen and that type of thing to educate them as to what's happening and how that's going to affect what they do.
Chair Klim and Representative Krieger, I think maybe we'll kind of share this between the three of us. We're very early into the process on this. We also had a companion policy option package that would have provided significant funding that we could have really gone into doing some of the things that you're talking about, and unfortunately that wasn't able to move forward with the economic climate that we're in. We have started some of those educational opportunities at some high-profile places like Diamond Lake and some other places. I think we're still in the process of developing some of the other materials and figuring out where to target those. I know we've been working with the Marine Board on some of that right now, and I don't know that we are fully operational where we want to be.
Can you tell me about how much was in the option package?
Chair Klim, Representative Krieger, it was for running the check stations, and if I remember correctly, it was a little over $2 million.
I would suggest that probably there are some private sources of dollars. You know, you've got a lot of commercial operations. You've got boat manufacturers, though they're having some problems. But you also have some fishing organizations that, if they know there's a need, they could help step up for the cost of printing certain type of brochures that you could get out there to educate people. You simply have to have somebody on a weekend get on a computer, design it. They're already, by the way, they're available in other states already. You don't have to start from scratch. I would suggest you could probably get those done without this body having to have our finger in the pie.
Go ahead.
Chair Klim, Representative Krieger. Starting about two and a half, three years ago, we formed a partnership with Portland State University and ODFW and began going out and doing trainings across the state. We've trained now at all of the ports of entries with ODOT, so as they inspect commercially hauled rigs coming through the weigh stations, they can look for a commercially hauled boat, and if there's a problem, they know who to call. We've also trained many of the Oregon State Police game officers. We've trained many of the State Marine Patrol County Sheriff's officers in invasive species identifications and protocols. We've opened up our trainings the last couple of years to campground hosts, to national forest, to U.S. Forest Service staff, and even local guides, and we're continuing to expand that. We have, I think, 8 trainings scheduled for this spring and summer. As for materials, educational materials, we've made sure that there is reference to the issue and proper boat decontamination procedures in the mandatory boater education course, as well as our website. Each year we provide a printed publication to every registered boat operator in the state that has contained some in-depth information on zebra and quagga mussels and other invasives and how to decontaminate your boat. And working closely with PSU and ODFW, we've distributed well over 1,000 of the red and white stop invasive species signs at virtually every boat ramp in the state. That doesn't mean they're still there because there's vandalism and other issues, but we are revamping that process this spring to make localized and customized signage to talk about local invasive species issues as well as the decontamination procedures. And like was mentioned, Diamond Lake has become a real nice testing ground for these messages. We're focused on tui chub prevention there, but also general invasive species prevention. And thanks to the interest of some ODFW biologists and the Forest Service down there, we've also expanded that in sort of a Southwest Oregon effort where we're getting more aggressive on those lakes where we're seeing some illegal introductions of black bass and some other things. There is a great deal of education effort, and from what I've seen at boat shows and in talking to people, we always feature it at our boat shows too, there's a great deal of interest and knowledge from the general public, much more now than there was even 3 or 4 years ago. There's a much better recognition of the issue now. So we'll continue to ramp that up as we go.
Good. Yes, I do.
Representative Van Orman.
So the reason that we're giving up on mandatory is for legal challenges, or is it money, or is it both?
Chair Klim, Vice Chair Van Orman. For the record, my name is Walt Marquis. I'm the captain of the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. Probably the answer is probably both, but the answer for the check stations of why we decided not to make them mandatory is it's because of the Oregon Constitution really and how it's been interpreted by Oregon law. And it's very similar to the how the police officers used to set up check stations for drivers under the influence of intoxicants. We can't do that any longer.
Right.
You can't require people to stop. And police officers really have authority to talk to a person under the authority of arrest, a stop, or a mere encounter. In this situation, it would have to be a mere encounter where a police officer has a legal right to be, but they're also the other person is also there voluntarily. So it's really due to the Constitution. And
okay.
Also, I'd like to address the question on training. The Oregon State Police has trained all of our game officers now for the last 2 or 3 years on these invasive species, both at our statewide in-service and at our regional in-service schools. And we also, we have officers all across the state. We also, in an attempt to target our enforcement where it's most needed, like, for instance, at like Billy Chinook on 4th of July weekend might be a good example. We always attempt to partner with our county agencies there and make sure that we're working together. And so in that manner, we're able to pass on whatever knowledge we have and share that with each other. So we're making a real effort. And we understand that this isn't something we just train on once. We need to continue to train on every year because things are going to change and information will change and officers will come and go. So we see this as a maintenance type of a program for training.
Thank you.
The other question you reminded me of, I have no idea if this is still the case, but when I was younger and we would travel by car south, it seems like there was some point in California where you'd have to go through something and surrender your fruit or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But well, I remember. I still remember what we had to surrender. But somebody stopped this, and you had to go through something. Is it our Constitution that's different, or do they not have that anymore because that's also unconstitutional?
Chair Clem, That of course is in California, a different constitution. We in Oregon have a different constitution. We do have check stations, sort of say here for trucks, truck inspection stations, weigh stations, but that has to do with federal law and commerce. Mm-hmm. Whereas these boats going up and down our highways are only recreationalists.
And yes, California.
Yeah, it's California. I mean, what are you going to do? Representative Krueger.
Well, can you tell us about, depending on how the budget goes, how many of the game troopers you're going to be losing statewide? Tell us what you originally funded for, 120-something. You had 10 vacancies. And where will you end up so we have an idea how that might affect what you've been able to do?
Yes, sir. Chair Clem, Representative Krueger. I guess there's been several scenarios out there, so I'll have to maybe go through a couple of them. But one is the governor's recommended budget. In the governor's recommended budget, 8 positions were cut, but 4 were added back through different funding. 2 is through state parks for ATV enforcement, and 2 is there if the fee increase goes through for the Oregon State Police. So in the governor's recommended budget, the Fish and Wildlife Division would lose 4, and the funding is that's the authority for the positions. There's also reduction in funding, which will require 6 vacancies for the next biennium. So it'll be 6 vacancies and 4 positions lost. In the most recent 30% scenarios that I'm building, 30% reduction for the Oregon State Police Agency would remove all of the Fish and Wildlife Division's general fund budget, which would be a reduction of 27 officers, which I think would include, 6 sergeants and 21 troopers. And that's in the general fund. If you look at a 30% reduction on the lottery funds, I believe that's 12 officers, 1 sergeant and 11 troopers.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Representative
Shoffler. A couple questions. One, the fee increases in the Fish and Wildlife fee bill?
Correct.
Okay. And then the other, just a comment more than anything, because I had the pleasure of serving with my colleague here in 05 on the Natural Resources Subcommittee. And I remember there was something on PBS about a Fish and Wildlife officer, and they're out in the boonies alone, even more sparse than they are on the highway. So I definitely hope we get that fee increase because you're already understaffed where you are now. And it's unfortunate we can't check these things due to our Constitution.
Yeah.
I remember when it happened.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I was with the department when that was instituted. You could no longer hold game checks and put up a sign.
Yep.
But there's, game officers are pretty inventive or in a little ingenuity. You can go on any logging road, Walton, you know it, and I know it, everybody does. You park your vehicle and you stand there. How many people drive by as you walk towards the car? I never had it happen in the last 5 years. You don't have to stop anybody. They volunteer. If they want to drive off, they can drive off. Most of the time, they're more than willing to visit with you and talk to you. As long as you're respectful with the public and not arrogant, you'll get a reputation in the area that you work, and they want to stop and talk to you.
Representative Clem, Chair Clem, Representative Krueger, that's correct. What I do find, though, is people will stop and talk to you. If a game officer is creative or just knows the law and understands the law and knows what its authority is and uses it wisely.
Yep.
But what happens is once the attorneys get involved, you find yourself in court arguing about whether it was a stop or not a stop, or did you have your hand up, or did you have your hand on your gun when you're standing there. Different things like that come up. And so the legal technicalities, you spend more time in court because of these laws, but usually we do get the job done.
Plus, I think, we're talking I-5 here, so unless you're Tom McCall trying to stop people at the border and turn them around, you don't really have any good options.
Well, Representative Clem, that's actually happened in Oregon where we've had vehicles enter Oregon that we knew had invasive species on it, and our officers was able to find them and communicate with them. But what do we do then? We didn't have any means to clean the boat. We actually escorted it to Washington voluntarily. Just so that we could have a place to wash the boat down and clean it up.
Well, I can tell committee members and our witnesses, we've got a few more here, but the Ways and Means folks actually are quite interested in getting this bill down there because they're trying to figure out what we can do. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. Just a quick comment. It's a small consolation in the budget outline that you just gave us, but at least we can all say and agree that the quality of your officers is much higher now than it used to be.
Just for those of you in the audience with the bewildered looks, we've got a former game officer here who's retired. And
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I was with the department 28 years, and I had one complaint. So that's not too bad, considering I'm the only guy that's pinched half his constituents.
And was it some well-dressed guy in like a Porsche Boxster, whatever that thing he drives is from Silverton, that was poaching and running
around? It was a legitimate complaint.
He had an elk strapped over that fancy car. He had a bunch of zebra mussels hanging out the muffler.
I don't think it was strapped. It was hanging on.
Oh, my goodness. I'm letting us get out of control here, aren't I? All right. Any more questions for this panel?
Good, Bill.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, fellas. David Moskowitz. We got them. And Lisa, why can't I pronounce this name? Lisa DeBrucare?
DeBrucare.
DeBrucare. Dave, why don't you go ahead and start?
We got the map
at least. That's pretty powerful stuff.
Maps are good. My name is David Moskowitz. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited and the Native Fish Society. Both organizations support House Bill 2220. We understand that there's a set of amendments that are coming, and we've had a glimpse at those. We support the check stations. We actually want to work on this bill to push it a little bit. We understand, and we just heard from obviously the departments and the state police about the issues that are there in terms of requiring stopping. But we think that there are other elements in law, and there's other states that are doing this, that we need to look at what they do to require the stop. The border check station is going to not be that helpful if we can't have people stopping there, and so we're going to continue to work with all parties to seek doing that. We also would like to have the committee consider expanding this to beyond just cars carrying boats. We believe that we should be thinking about all recreational vehicles. So if you're coming up from California with a trailer full of ATVs or quads or motorcycles, if you're an Oregonian, you've gone down the Mojave Desert and ridden, and then you're coming back to the state, you've got California weeds and seeds in your machinery. And we believe if you can put a state-of-the-art cleaning system at the border that's convenient to use, that always works, that users, whether they're riders or whether they're in boats, will want to stop to clean their equipment before they bring it home. This, as Mr. Englund said from ODFW, this was a policy option package in ODFW's budget, and the cost in that was $2.8 million. And that was for constructing the stations and operating them. And obviously, over time, this will be an expense to both staff it and maintain the facilities. Building it would be a one-time expense. Idaho is one chamber of the Idaho legislature has actually passed a boater fund to help fund check stations in Idaho. There was a recent news article on that. California is doing some stops, and you're right. If you take Highway 199 from Cave Junction down to California, there's a California station where they check for agricultural products. There are facilities that most of this, either they're Department of Transportation or Department of Agriculture facilities. Oregon needs to work in a bi-state cooperative approach with Idaho and California to try to use some of these existing facilities, try to find the authority to require the stops. I've been working quite a bit this session on a couple of ways to fund this, because that's really the nut. There's been tremendous support from your committee for dealing with and controlling invasive species. There's very excellent cooperation happening with the agencies, and Lisa will probably be telling you about that. So I have a couple of things going on. One, in the Department of Fish and Wildlife's budget, we all, if you clam or crab, you're buying a recreational license. It's been popular enough that there's been surpluses in that fund. Those are probably not going to survive this session, but this is an extraordinary time. It's such a popular activity, though, that there are surpluses in that fund. And the statutory directive for spending that, I believe, allows for a small amount of that money to go into fund invasive species efforts. And I think that we should look at that. It may not be an option in this particular year. But that would help jumpstart things. I want to turn your attention to House Bill 3447, and this would establish a non-motorized boater fee. This bill, we're hoping to have a hearing on this bill. The bill is written in some key amendments, which we're preparing to make it an appropriate fee. But right now, the Marine Board is funded by motorized boaters only, and they pay for boat ramps and bathrooms. They pay for boater safety and OSP enforcement. And they also do the title searches on the hulls. I have a drift boat without an engine. I use these facilities without paying into the system. There's 500,000 non-motorized boats in Oregon. It's two-thirds of the boats. Parks has done a survey of non-motorized boaters asking them, would they pay a moderate fee? And they had 53% of about 300 people they surveyed said they would. What we'd like to do with this, if we were successful with this, we'd like to fund maintenance and operation of boat ramps and bathrooms, boater safety and enforcement, a non-motorized water trail system with parks, and invasive species control. We think we could raise anywhere from $3 to $6 million a year, and we'll be working with the appropriate committees to try to move that bill along. Utility groups, special districts, League of Cities, they all have a very strong interest in controlling these invasive species. And I think that Mr. Anglin spoke about the potential cost to water utilities. Anyone who's got a pipe or any kind of infrastructure in the water is at risk if some of these aquatic invasive species come into the state. And we're at that point where the ounce of prevention is going to be worth a pound of cure. I do have an idea, since I've mentioned the use of these check stations for ATVs. As you probably are aware, there's an ATV fund that's funded from gas tax and user fees, and that's controlled by a committee of ATV users. It's very specifically dedicated to services for riders. And I've had initial conversations with a number of folks involved with that committee and with parks and with the ATV Dealers Association, and there is initial interest that if there were check stations that were really state-of-the-art and that always worked, that there would be interest in using, potentially using those funds to help with that construction. And we're going to be pursuing that with them. It's preliminary, but I want to mention it just to let you know that we're working hard to try to help fund these efforts, because you guys, your committee and your body will set the policy for the state, which is very important, and I'm trying to bring some of the user groups along to help you fund that work. And I really appreciate your efforts. I brought a couple things. I got these from Lisa, so I'm not going to claim credit for it at all, but these are some of the information pieces that are out there on education. There's a little card that I've had in my briefcase all session, and it hardly looks used at all. It's very tough. I'll pass these to the committee, but there's quite a bit of information out there for people, so the education part is also very important, and we support that. And I appreciate your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Lisa.
Chair Clem, representatives of the committee, my name is Lisa Debrecare. I'm the Oregon Invasive Species Council coordinator. I'll be very brief, and I definitely won't read this to you. The biggest purpose for me handing this out to you was to show you the map on the back, to show you how quagga and zebra mussels are knocking on Oregon's door. We do want to thank, as a council, thank the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Oregon State Police, and the Oregon Marine Board for working collaboratively to develop draft amendments that we think will further this critically important legislation. We are concerned about zebra and quagga mussels in particular because we think they are the greatest impending threat to Oregon's water resources. We're estimating that it would cost the state $25 million if they got into the Columbia River, in addition to the cost that the 13 mainstem hydropower facilities would have to pay to maintain them if we had quagga mussels. And we know that the Metropolitan Water District in Southern California is currently paying $10 million a year to deal with quagga mussels. That's just one water district in one part of a state. So it's pretty important that we get on this and get on it as quickly as possible. We know they are coming closer to Oregon, and we know that the best chance to keep them out is to have legislation in place and hopefully followed quickly by check stations. That's all I had to say. We appreciate the support of the committee in furthering this legislation, and thank you.
Representative Shopler.
Thank you, and I appreciate you coming, and I support the bill, too, and I definitely support the fee increase within the Fish and Wildlife budget to at least maintain our staff of Fish and Wildlife officers, if not increase them, because it's an incredibly difficult task to try and manage this. My question, David, though, is when you start talking about a new tax on something, it just makes everybody's hair stand up. Have you discussed this with the Fisher men and women groups about applying this new tax on a non-motorized boat? Because I imagine they'd have a little something to say about it. And where is that, Mr. Chair, is that bill here or is it in revenue?
It's in my committee.
Oh, it's in transportation.
Transportation.
Well, goody, I'll get another one at that, too. So have you? Yep. Are they going to speak to that today, to this, do you know?
No, Chair Klem, Representative Shoffler. Those folks, we have actually been having conversations with the guides and packers, with the steelheaders, with a number of the groups that represent boaters in the building. And the initial conversations, no one has officially weighed in with support, but there's cautious support, and no one has said, heck no, there's no way we'd support that. We've heard a number of concerns. The amendments to that bill are going to reflect some of those concerns. We've heard from some of the people we've spoken with. And this fee, obviously, in this revenue climate, you guys, your body is hearing many, many proposals for new fees. This is a large group of people who are not paying into a system that is, it's taxed. It's county boat ramps, state boat ramps. They're busy. Their facilities need a lot of maintenance, and it's all riding on the backs of motorized boaters at this point. We believe when we make the case of where we want this money to go, we get a good response at this point. Our outreach is not done, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do that and be able to report on it if we get a hearing on that bill in the appropriate committee.
Yeah, but I really would like to keep us on the bill in front of us because that's a whole
okay, forgive me, Mr. Chair.
Sorry. It's okay. It's good
question.
Bill
should be passed.
Okay. So, any other questions? Great.
Good luck.
Thank you.
That's the end of our bonus list.
Okay. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2220. Before I open the other public hearing, again, just a reminder, we're going to do the next public hearing on 2020, and then we're waiting on a couple things back from different offices around the Capitol. Any questions about process there, where we're at, before we move on?
So are we...
Representative Robles.
Are we planning on moving this bill to Ways and Means today?
Well, I would like to, but I don't think we're going to be able to.
Okay.
And we don't have... It's the amendments that are still being worked on, and we don't have them to help deal with the constitutional issue.
Gotcha. Yeah.
We could probably at least get our visit, but don't invade sign ready for the border.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2020. And Ezra's going to bring me some names. I'm sorry.
That's what you offered. It was part of that work group, too, from downtown. I'm not just a cheaper than she could.
Yeah. Just as a point of interest, yesterday I was needed to look up some invasive species stuff, and if anybody goes to the Statesman Journal website, they've got an amazing collection of invasive species. You go under
2020
state, and then environment, and then there's an invasive species section, and it's got links to all the different things around the internet on invasive species, lists of them, articles. I mean, it's really phenomenal. So I was pouring through it yesterday trying to find, I forget what, but the name of something. It wasn't quagga, but it was somebody, one of these little critters.
Mr. Chair, when looking at these brochures,
yeah, Californians,
has anybody done any research? I mean, look at Michigan. It's just covered with them.
Yeah.
On what? Something. I would like to.
We're having people back up who could probably talk about it because it was their
yeah.
map.
Amazing.
So, Lisa and Dave, I don't know why I released you. Can you come back? Sorry. Before I even let you start, Representative Schaff has got a question for you already.
Yeah, thanks for coming again. But, boy, this is incredible in the Midwest here. Can you get us some info on exactly what kind of damages are happening in Michigan, how they're dealing with it, or if they even can deal with it at this time?
Representative Clem.
Not much time doing it, but if you...
Chair Clem, Representative Schaffler, yes, we can. We have... lots of information on
Lisa,
a state-by-state
basis.
Lisa, I might
have to have you reintroduce yourself.
My name is Lisa Deborah-Kerr. I'm the Oregon Invasive Species Council Coordinator. And there's a lot of information being generated by every state on a species-by-species basis as well as groupings of species, so we can get that for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so Dave, who would like to start?
My name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today representing Trout Unlimited, the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and the Native Fish Society. Chair Clem, members of the committee, we're here today to support House Bill 2020. We believe it's a reasonable approach to try to fund some of the state's efforts to back up the policy bills that your body is adopting this session. And we're not experts on the lottery bonding technicalities, but these funds would be well used. The Invasive Species Council, which is going to be housed at the Department of Agriculture, hopefully by the end of the session, has a very good strategic plan for the state. There's a lot of direction that the legislature is hopefully providing this session, and we hope that we can do whatever we can to help fund those efforts. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Lisa. Representative Klein, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Deborah-Kerr. I'm the Oregon Invasive Species Council Coordinator. There's a few things that I wanted to comment on about this bill, especially since there was a conversation between legislative fiscal and our council late yesterday afternoon. Just to talk about the bill in general, we know that the least expensive and most efficient way to deal with invasive species is to keep them out of Oregon to begin with. And then once they get here, to eradicate them as quickly as possible. So early detection, rapid response are the least expensive, most efficient ways to deal with invasive species. And that's the whole purpose behind this bill. Last year in 2008, the state of Idaho passed legislation that enacted a $5 million emergency fund that would allow their state to respond to new invasions of invasive species. And the way they have it set up is, if a new invader comes into the state, the Idaho Invasive Species Council meets with the heads of natural resource agencies in the state and then disperses these funds to the appropriate agency that would deal with the invader. So if it's a marine invader or if it's a mammal invader, it would go to the appropriate agency. Our bill is developed with that kind of framework in mind. Whether we have crafted the appropriate words to articulate that, I'm now no longer certain as of our conversation with Legislative Fiscal yesterday, but that's the way that this is intended to be managed, that there would be a new account that's a rollover account created within the Oregon Department of Agriculture under the Oregon Invasive Species Council. When a new invader comes into the state and it's deemed an emergency of a magnitude such as a quagga mussel, It would flip the switch where the Invasive Species Council would meet with the Natural Resources Cabinet of all the Natural Resource Agency heads, and we would make a determination of the level of the emergency, the amount of funds that would need to be dispersed, and who they would go to. The language in the bill talks about grants as opposed to that kind of disbursement of funds. So there's a little bit of confusion whether we're going to be a granting agency like OWEB. That is not the intent at all. The grant is really a disbursement of fund to a state agency or entity that would deal with the new invader. So at this point, we're not sure how to get these amendments made, but our council offers all the assistance we can in getting the appropriate language to make this bill a reality.
So I'd taken a look at the bill yesterday and saw the word grants and just thought, that's a little odd, because I had been envisioning the concept. I mean, really what we'd be talking about is, instead of going to the emergency board on whatever interval they happen to be on and saying, hey, we've had an outbreak, you know, I know you've only got X number of dollars, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant needs money right now, and, you know, so does a firefighting cost. We need some, too. We've up front thought about this funding mechanism and have it sitting there. So it shifts sort of from the legislative e-board function to a natural resource executive cabinet, basically, and a council to help deal with things on a more expedited basis. But I saw the word grant. I thought, well, that doesn't seem exactly quite right. So I'm not that I'm much of a lawyer by any means, since I'm not one. But I'm glad they got it. Representative Van Orman.
In thinking about this, my presumption is that this sets up a fund. It initially starts with lottery bonds, but it could accept perhaps the fees that David was talking about, so that this fund then becomes its own source of money for the problems that we're trying to work on.
That's correct. Chair Clem, Representative Van Orman, the idea is to establish the fund initially, and then if there are opportunities to bring in funds to supplement it or keep it running and managing in the future, we could do that through lots of sources. Some of them David mentioned. There's other potential opportunities out there as well.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, please. Representative Clem, Vice Chair Van Orman, David Moskowitz again. We had a legislative concept that was similar to the Idaho bill that somehow got lost in transition around that deadline. And so there's actually, I think we can track that down, it would contain much of the language that Lisa is talking about.
Representative Riverblatt.
Thank you. From my perspective, this is kind of like the fire fund. We have to have a rapid response if we're going to do anything with invasive species. It needs to be set up, and there may be other ways. In fact, it may come to the point where the people who were talking about water boards and other kinds of stuff, where the pipes are going to be, I mean, they might want to have a sub-account that says, if it's quagga, we want to make sure it stays out. We're willing to pay a little bit of money for this group if they can develop the trust and belief that this group is really going to take action. You know, if we'd had this and some money in it for the sudden oak death, instead of waiting for the e-board to have to take action, we could have probably gone in and taken care of it quicker, instead of having an experience that it could have spread during the time you're waiting for the e-board to happen. Right. So from my perspective, if you're really going to take seriously invasive species in general, you have to have some way in the state to rapid response. It came in today, we got it today, it's done.
Yeah.
And we don't have that right now, except in the budgets of the individual agencies. And they oftentimes will do that. I mean, that's what's been happening. Our agencies have just taken a deep breath and sucked their resources away from other stuff and done it when they could, but to know that there's a place there. And then, I mean, if we can show that we are doing this better than other people, it's possible that you can get the insurance policy for after $10 million. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. If you look at the fire fund, there may be other ways in which we can insure against having to spend the catastrophic money that Michigan is paying. I mean, you know, you look at any of those people in the Midwest and any of those water bid districts, they're spending an enormous amount of money now changing out pipes and doing stuff. And it's going to be forever. I mean, they haven't figured out. My only thing is that eventually everything will be dead in the lake, and then they'll die because there won't be any nutrients left. But pretty much they suck it dry from
Mississippi's
the way it is
healthy.
And just keep reproducing. So I think this is something we really need to have a conversation about. We really need to do. Getting it right would be important.
Representative Shoffler.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on it, but I believe I've read places where the Great Lakes have actually rebounded from incredible devastation. So I don't think it's doomsday there. But clearly there's a problem here. And, Mr. Chair, this extends far broader than fish and wildlife. And I think someday when we do develop more water out of the Columbia, when we do, I think we should seriously look at taking a percent of a percent, and applying it directly to this, because this could literally clog up bottom of the dam if it went to hell in a handbasket around here. So I think it's, we need to be looking for different places of funding, and we're not going to get it off non-motorized boats all the way.
Right.
I think you have some merit there, but it's way broader than what we're talking about here, man.
Yeah. It is. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I know that Dave knows I'm a little grouchy about the non-motorized.
Yeah,
so he's being polite and not calling me out, but I'm working on myself. Representative Krieger, did you have something?
Not a thing.
No. Okay.
May I just...
Yeah, one second. Sure. Let me just make sure I didn't miss anybody.
Please. Thank you. Chair Clem, Representative Shoffler, David Moskowitz. And I think you're right. It's a bigger issue. The boaters, I think the boaters should pay their fair share, but it's something that utilities, both water and power utilities, the federal government, League of Cities, all have a strong interest in. And so we need to make sure we're bringing them to the table so that we can all be working in concert.
And one more, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to get my other chair in trouble today, but maybe we should amend the non-motorized boater tax onto the bicycle tax.
And neither of them will move. Well, we are moving to government by fiat.
When we do develop that water,
we
should take part.
That was punny.
Maybe I'll stand at recess for a moment. Ready? Okay, committee, come back out of recess. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2020. Thank you. It's clear that we are. This is not only a economic issue for all of our industries and recreational and hydro and everything else, but it's part of our way of life.
Exactly,
that
right.
You know, you want to go out to the lake and enjoy yourself, and you can't in some lakes because you can't get through the weeds, you know, the milfoil or whatever it is.
Environmental disaster.
Yeah, it is. It's an environmental disaster. And I would completely agree with the chair of the Rules Committee, who was, somehow this bill came out of there. I'm not sure who was responsible for it, but it's a good one. And as soon as we get some work done on the language, we'll have it back and be ready to send it. And as I was mentioning just briefly yesterday in the Ways and Means sub, multiple members from all parties were really excited about these bills and want them down there because we're working on some of these agencies' budgets. We had Marine Board yesterday and just really interested in trying to figure out on the check stations how that might work and some of those issues. So I think we've got a lot of momentum this session, and unfortunately, the Sudden Oak Death Syndrome issue sort of, I think, put us all on the alert of how quickly something can affect, in this case, the nursery industry, but one of our key industries, and cause a lot greater harm to the general fund and to those businesses quickly. And there's ways to turn it around quickly, but you got to have a fund ready to go. So, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2583. And Representative Roblin, do you want to chat with us for a moment about the Dash 1 amendments that are in front of us?
Yes, you should have just received some Dash 1 amendments, and my hope right now is that we just start moving this. When we had the first hearing on this bill, the thing that came up was there really wasn't a definition of what invasive species were. So Professor Sipsma and Hunting Association basically said afterwards that they would get together. We just got the amendments out today, and I appreciate them working on those. But in order to move this bill and get it going, I have no problem with this just being an attachment to people to look at. I think the amendments are good. We've checked it out with the other people. They give a definition. You should have had that handed out to you just a few minutes ago, I think. So it should have been there. And it really relies, the definition becomes whatever the Ag and Natural Resources or the Agricultural Department or the Natural Resources Department say it is. So, and they post that, they change that depending on what's there. So we don't get into the problems of some of these non-native fishes as being whatever. They make the determination. I think people feel more comfortable with that. But we can have Senate do that if we're ready to move this bill. I want to make sure that, from my perspective, this bill gets to the Senate, gets done, and the sooner we can get there, the better. We don't have the physical on the amendment, so I'm saying we'll send the amendment with it so they have an idea if they want to change it a little bit, but recognize that we are planning, and I've talked to other people, and everybody seems to be feel that that's fine to do it that way. And then
so that makes sense. If there's amendments, but we're not actually going to adopt them, but they would give you an idea of what it looks like. The intent of the sponsors to have those handled in the Senate, and the fiscal can be worked up in the meantime. And the issue is essentially around the one real difference, I think, is kind of the definition of aquatic invasive species.
Yeah, and invasive species in general, just to make sure that you have the definition. Because there was a concern that we have some non-native fish and other things here, that they're not considered invasive. They're here now. And we want to make clear that what we're talking about is those that the Agriculture Department or the Fish and Wildlife Department have deemed as invasives are the ones we're working at. That's the only ones we're really caring about.
Okay. Any discussion or discomfort with that plan? If we weren't running up against a deadline, I'd say, well, we'll have another meeting and have our amendments in our fiscal, but we're going to be running through bills fairly quickly as we get closer to our April 29th deadline. So with that, I would take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2583 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2583 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Gillian.
Aye.
Representative Roblin.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Representative Van Arman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Clem.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to the floor.
I would love to, and I will also mention that we had the discussion about these amendments, so it goes over so people know clearly that we are going to tighten up that definition.
Get the legislative record established. Good. Thank you. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2221, and we will be carrying over. We're still waiting on a rescission of subsequent referral, hopefully, and the fiscal to come back to help build our case that it doesn't need to go down to Ways and Means. And that's the feral swine issue. And then I'm going to recess for a moment. We're just going to see if we can possibly get 2714 on its way here as well, but we're needing a recension, a fiscal and then a recension of Ways and Means for us. So the committee will stand in recess for a few minutes here.
No, just working in my office.
Going to reconvene the committee on agriculture, natural resources, and rural communities.
Yes, he is.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
For your patience.
I move we go into recess.
Out of order.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Middle name.
Can I open the work session?
Representative, out of order.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2714 in case I hadn't yet. Why don't I take a motion and then we'll have Representative Roman discuss the Dash 2 amendments.
You want to amend before you talk about them?
Well, we'll just talk about them as part of the discussion on the... what would you advise me?
I'd have a discussion.
Okay.
In case they're not right.
Oh, good, good point.
Otherwise, you're adopting something into the bill before we know what we got.
It's nice to have either current or former chairs all around me. So let's have Representative Roblin. Would you like to talk for a moment about the Dash 2s?
I'm trying to figure out if I have the Dash 2s.
Okay.
We could bring somebody else up, too, if they work on
this morning.
Oh, well, yeah, but it's not.
Want mine?
I guess I do, because I'm not finding them in mine.
I do know that the Dash 1s are incorporated in the Dash 2, so you can skip past the Dash 1s.
Oh, thank you.
These okay. Both actually caught me a little bit by surprise, and I didn't read this one as much. Is Anna... No, yeah, Anna.
The Dash 1s are in the Dash 2?
Can we bring up correct. Anna?
Correct.
Yes, and
please.
Who else? Yeah.
Please, join us.
Thank you very much. Because we all got a little bit caught by surprise in the bill coming up today. They can do a better job of explaining this than I.
Please, whoever would like to start, just identify yourselves for the record and
sorry,
talk to us about the Dash.
Chairman Klim, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with DEQ. I have with me Ryan Hoof, who is our... person who works on the ballast water program, and then I think you all probably know Anna, who's a fellow helping out the Coastal Caucus. And if you would like, I can explain the amendment.
Please.
Okay. The Dash 2 amendment does really two things. One thing it does is continue the task force, what's commonly known as the Ballast Water Task Force, for another biennium. It does make some small changes to the task force. Those are the Dash 1 amendments that are rolled into the Dash 2 amendments. And then also the other thing that the Dash 2 amendment does is it gives the department rulemaking authority for two issues that came out of the task force report that was given to the legislature back in October. Those two issues are rulemaking authority to give the department the ability to set standards, treatment standards for ballast water, and then also rulemaking authority for the department to address high-risk ballast water in emergency situations.
Questions on this?
The big thing from my The big thing from my perspective is that what's happened over the last few years is ballast water has become a bigger and bigger issue with respect to invasive species. And California and Washington have taken a little more aggressive movement towards that than we did. So that meant that our waters became more exposed because a lot of ships would stop by Oregon to drop off stuff. In the Columbia, they just move across the river and they could discharge stuff that they couldn't discharge on the other side of the river. So one of the things that the commission recommended is in here is the consistency between Oregon, California, and Washington. Once they pass it, we need to get caught up and move to the same place. And that's why the rule making is more important than it is us doing it, because when they change, we need to respond so that we don't become the place that everybody comes to discharge. So that's another part of this.
Good point.
Why I think it's important.
Yep.
Any other questions for these folks?
No. Good work.
Representative Shoffer.
Representative Robin triggered my... do we have data of the frequency of that occurring?
We have over the last year, now that we have funding for...
I think I might need to have you identify yourself.
My name is Ryan Hoof, Ballast Water Program Manager at DEQ. For the last year and a half now, we've been gathering data on ballast discharge trends in terms of arrivals and discharge activity. The type of scenario that Representative Roblin is referring to, specifically, we did see an instance of a non-compliant vessel enter the Columbia River just in January. And they had gone to a Vancouver port, had been informed that they were carrying non-compliant ballast water that had not been properly managed, and they were proposing to discharge that. I should note that this was coming from what we consider to be one of the most high-risk areas, that being the San Francisco Bay. And there was quite an exchange in terms of that shipping operator's decision process about what to do. And one of the things that was suggested, not necessarily by the shipping operator, I might add, but it came up that we have different regulations in Oregon waters and also much smaller penalties for a non-compliant discharge. And so it certainly raised our concerns about these issues of why it's really important, we deem, to have consistency amongst the states. So that's the one example, very recent example that I can provide. In terms of regularity that it happens, we haven't seen too many instances like that other than that one in the last year.
Thank you. The bigger problem is we don't know if somebody has already made that decision out at sea, because they know what the rules and regulations are. So they could have made the decision on the come that their first port of entry is going to be Oregon for specifically that purpose, if in fact it was going to be the kind of fine it would be. So it's difficult to track that information. All we know is when their disparity is so great, it puts the idea into people's minds.
Okay. I think we're done with questions with you three. Thank you. So I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendments of the House Bill 2714.
Representative Krieger moves to adopt the -2 amendments dated March 27, 2009. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
You want the motion to move the bill in? Mr. Chair, move that we move House Bill 2714 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2714 as amended to the might need you to say the subsequent referral be rescinded.
With the subsequent referral to Ways and Means will be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2714 is amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation at the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means to be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byers.
Aye.
Representative Gillian.
Aye.
Representative Gorman.
Aye.
Representative Coffin.
Aye.
Representative Wigan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Norman.
Oh, aye, sorry.
Vice Chair
Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Clark.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to the floor as amended. Representative Roblin, would you like to carry another one?
I would be glad.
Great. Representative Roblin will carry our Shipping Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force project. With that, representatives, thank you for your time and attention. I'm going to adjourn our meeting.